Well, welcome everybody to Conversations with the Citizen. I'm Catherine Newman, and I'm here with Mr. Don House, who is a filmmaker among many other things. Welcome, Don.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, we're happy to have you here. So, first of all, I want to mention to everybody why you're here. The newsworthy aspect is that... Yes. We are finally almost able to purchase online the Whole Foods Inglewood Changing Chicago's Food Desert documentary, which is something that you have created for us. Yes. So we'll get to that a little bit later. Just wanted to plug that right away.
Thank you so much.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Briefly about your background, how you got into film.
Sure. Catherine and Darrell. I'm originally from Chicago, born and raised right down the street. Not down the street, but I live down the street, right off of Cottage Grove. So I just love Chicago. I love the south side of Chicago. I started, believe it or not, as an architectural draftsman. I went to CVS. Yeah, CVS. And I really enjoy drafting. And I won a couple of little awards in high school. And I really wanted to pursue drafting. So I went to Columbia College, believe it or not. I just didn't feel like I should. I wasn't ready to go out to another school. I wanted to commute to college. Mm-hmm. So after graduating from CVS, Columbia College had an architectural drafting program. And I says, okay, great, I'll take it. So the first year I'm doing drafting, what I love. But I just heard all this bustling upstairs on the 7th and the 8th floor of Columbia College. And I took a lunch break, went upstairs, and there's the TV department. And I just fell in love with the energy and the big cameras and the teachers and the students. They were just running and just doing their thing. I was like, this is so cool. So I transferred my degree program to study television broadcast. And from that point on, I've been studying television after I graduated in 84. My first job was at WMAQ as a news tape editor. And I really enjoyed it. It was a vacation relief position where you are working from March through October. So you know your start date and you know your end date. So I embraced it. I loved it. I was learning journalism. I was learning how to work faster and edit faster. So from that point on, I just really, really just kind of got the journalism bug. So I just went from one station to another as I was growing from in the television, what they call ENG department, Electronic News Gathering Department. So I worked in Chicago, and then I worked in San Francisco, and I worked in L.A., came back to Chicago, went back to L.A. And I strongly felt, Catherine, with the skills that I had in television journalism, the appreciation and the speed of editing, I just kind of felt like I can get any job. As long as it was a TV station in that city, I just felt confident enough to work in the news department because I just had what it takes, which was just working under deadlines and being able to assess material and to tell a story unsupervised. Mm-hmm. You know, at the very beginning, you have a reporter standing over you, but once you get into it, and once they know you, then they'll let you go. They'll just drop off a tape and some scripts and you're gone. So that's what it is in a nutshell.
So with that being said, I am curious to hear from you. You know, a couple decades of your background are strictly in television. Did transitioning into film or documentary film specifically, did that just kind of fall into your lap? Or what was your experience like making that shift in Chicago and in LA, or wherever you were when you had that aha moment?
You know, it was very interesting. When I'm editing, I'm telling a story. Mm-hmm. When I'm working with the anchor people and the reporters, they're leaving a script and they're reading the script. So I'm hearing the inflection and how they're reading, and I'm listening to the flow and I'm editing it. And I just kind of like inherited their style and kind of took their style and figured that, hey, I can do this. I can tell a better story with someone else's, you know, voice with a different topic of interest versus news. I had different interests as in music, which was classic soul mm-hmm. artists. That's when we come into people like Marvin Gaye and Norman Conners and the Emotions. And so I wanted to take that documentary style, that news ENG editing style, and apply it to something that I really had a passion for. So just over the years, I just really wanted to get more involved in the production aspect. So from editing, I got into the camera work, I got into writing, and I started, got the confidence up to do my own voiceovers. But that is what kind of got me into the documentary feel. It's to tell mm-hmm. a story, and to tell it, with accuracy, with accountability, and to be as entertaining as possible, as well as educational with my documentaries.
And you mentioned Marvin Gaye, and that is something that I wanted to talk about. One of your previous films, A Star for Marvin Gaye, I just wanted to hear about your experience creating that film. What was your connection to Marvin Gaye? Just talk to me about that film. I haven't seen it, unfortunately. Yeah. So I'm just interested in your perspective of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a little while, too. Interesting. Well, I was working at NBC in Burbank. This is the NBC station where Jay Leno was doing The Tonight Show. It's huge. It's a four-block area, square. So I just happened to, they also, at the NBC station, they housed the KNBC TV station, as well as Univision or Univision. Mm-hmm. So, huge place. So I'm trying to set up the scenario. Yeah. And one evening, I happened to go into the cafeteria. And around this time, around 10 o'clock-ish at night type of deal, either you're working and editing or you're shooting in a story or something like that, but nobody's in the cafeteria. And I just happened to go into the cafeteria, and I met a gentleman. And I just said hello to him, African-American guy. I said, hey, how's it going? And, he's all by himself, place is empty. I said, oh, I'm doing fine. And then I just chit-chatted with him. And I said, are you working? Are you getting ready to work? And I'm being all nosy. And he said, no, I'm just kicking back here. He says, I'm on my way to being retired. So I just chit-chatted a little bit, and I think we talked about music. And all of a sudden, he says, I used to be in the music business. I said, really? What did you do? He says, I was a recording engineer. I said, this is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
In Burbank. He says, I was a recording engineer for Marvin Gaye on four albums. He says, Got to Give It Up, Here My Dear, and he mentioned two others. I said, you are, and I love music. And my ears just perked. I was like, wow, that is so cool. So I'm just kind of imagining, the vibe, how it must have been with him doing the engineering and the audio, mm-hmm. Marvin Gaye's kicking back. So we just got to know each other, and I really wanted to interview him. I said, you got to tell your story. This is great. And at that time, I think Marvin Gaye just passed away, yes, about a year ago, prior to that. I said, you got to tell your story. This is so cool. And he says, yeah, that's kind of cool. He said, but who you really want to talk to? You want to talk to a guy named Ron Brewington. Ron Brewington is a radio journalist, and he's trying to get a star for Marvin Gaye, a posthumous star for Marvin Gaye. And he's having some hard time, so he's doing this radio protest, this quiet protest in the community to get these signatures to get Marvin Gaye going, get a star on Hollywood Walk of Fame. I said, okay, well, cool, I'll talk to Ron. I said, but I'm going to talk to you too, mm-hmm. Art. His name was Art Stewart, by the way. So I go to Ron, and he's enthused about the story, and I told him that I really want to talk to Art, but I want to talk to you, and I want to get this on tape. And at the time, I worked at a television station, KCAL, KCAL-TV. And KCAL Television was the first station that Disney purchased, brand new station in Paramount Studios. They gutted out an audio studio, a sound stage, and turned it into a brand new TV station. This is like 1987, 88. Mm-hmm. And I'm introducing myself as an editor of KCAL TV. I won a couple of awards at that time. And also, too, I was working on classic soul music hits, just on paper, the concept. So I spoke to Ron, and he's getting all energized because I wanted to do a story with him and Art. So Ron says, hey, you need to talk to Marvin Gaye III. I said, I will talk to him. You got his number. And he gives me his number, and it's just started falling into place. So I call up Marvin Gaye III, and I told him I wanted to do a story on the posthumous star. I spoke to Ron, I got R. Stewart on board, and I said, I'm not going to do anything negative, because there's some, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story, but Marvin Gaye's father killed Marvin Gaye, the son. So I didn't want to ride on that too much. I wanted to ride on the good stuff, and I promised him that I would do that. And he says, okay, cool. So I go to Marvin Gaye III, I go to this house, you know, myself and my co-producer, who's my my wife at the time, Katiana, she worked in makeup. And we go to this beautiful house, the gates open like this, and I was like, my God, this is Marvin Gaye's house. So I meet Marvin Gaye III, and he embraces it. He loved the concept so much that he did an on-camera introduction to the documentary. He says, hi, my name is Marvin Gaye III, and you're watching Classic Soul Music Hits for Star from Marvin Gaye. I was like, this is cool. Mm-hmm. So I got that, plus I signed some documents, and I think I gave him like $100 or something like that. It was very weird. It was just to seal the deal. That's what it was. And I maybe 10, I don't remember. I got to look at my notes. But and then that's where I got the energy, and I got the rights from him. So I got his blessing. And then a star was born, or a star from Marvin Gaye was born. And that's how I started to feel energized and empowered to finish it off. And at the time, I invited a radio DJ to do the narration. His name is Mike Mann, and he just did a phenomenal job. And sometimes I do documentaries without narration, but that time I wanted to do narration. So it just took a life of its own. Got sponsors. It aired on Fox TV in LA, and then also too, it aired in Fox TV in Chicago. And in Chicago, when it aired, I got nominated for an Emmy for editing, best editing, for that film. So that's where it took off. I haven't seen it since, because I've been working at other TV stations. I've been teaching, so I'm excited to give life to it again, because I just heard that Marvin Gaye III gave Dr. Dre the rights to do a story on Marvin Gaye. So I says, oh, let me just start digging into my archives and get this thing going. Because when I was working at the TV station and doing a documentary, we were working on tape. My master tape is on a tape this big, and the tape is this wide. So there's a special machine that has to digitize it from tape to getting it into a digital system to tweak it, color correct it, and that sort of thing. And so I got to find a machine because a lot of companies don't have it. Columbia College does have it, but that's where I'm at now. So I'm really excited about bringing life to that.
And is the Marvin Gaye film, is it available anywhere publicly, or is that kind of what you're working on doing now?
That's exactly what I'm working on. Yeah, it aired, unless someone has a VHS copy from 1992, I think it's when it aired. But
well, you'll have to keep us posted on that.
Oh, I will. I am totally excited. Usually I'm really, really super busy, to the point where I can't do the archiving. I can't do these things, because I'm just either teaching, which I love. But I just took some time to really get back into the archives, because things is happening relatively fast. So I'm excited about that.
And so you mentioned winning an Emmy, which I do have on my list of topics for us today. If you could give me a little bit more details about that. I mean, I just personally cannot fathom being in that environment to even be nominated for an Emmy. I'm really curious.
Can have it, y'all. I'm just letting you just claim it right now. Claim it right now.
Okay, maybe I'll win an Emmy. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see.
You know, because people don't set out to win an Emmy. I was just doing good work every day. I'm just doing good work, great work, you know, to the point where the reporters and the anchor people were like, hey, is Don available? Can he cut this story? So I'm in KCAL TV. This is like 91. And this is like right after the big riots from the Rodney King decision. So there was a lot of protest and energy going on. So I got an Emmy in a category that's really hard to get an Emmy. It's in hard news, editing hard news, meaning that it was shot the same day. It was dropped off by a reporter or an anchor person. They did the narration. You got really an hour and a half to edit this thing, and it's on the air. That's it. So that's exactly what happened. There was this big protest. Jesse Jackson got involved. He's in the streets. Now I'm describing the video. I wasn't there. I'm the editor. Mm-hmm. I'm in the TV station. But the footage was just energized. There's a lot of movement, a lot of, you know, action. There was some people storming the courthouse at the time. I forget what the subject was. It was just... No, I know what the subject was. I don't want to talk about it. Because it took me 20 years to forget about it. You know. But it was very energetic. It was energized, and it was in the streets. It was in the courthouse. So the camera operator just happened to do a phenomenal job on the footage. And I said, wow, this is crazy. So the reporter did a phenomenal job of writing it and doing the voice, the narration. So I get the script. I get the tape. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm editing, and I'm using a lot of what they call natural sound. A lot of the da-da-da-da-da-da, wait about it, you know, and then the narration comes in. And then you hear some other natural sound. Da-da-da-da-da, we're going to come out of it, and then narration. So it's a blend of natural sound, narration, natural sound, cars, trucks, you know, police sirens, natural sound, and then it closes off. So I edit this thing, edit, put it on the air. And once it's on the air, I can't change it. That's the one that it was submitted to the Emmy Awards. You have to submit an air check, not something that'll get air, but I'm going to go back and retweak it and change the shot. No, it's the air check. So it went on the air, and I said, wow, that was crazy. And this is a KCAL television. This is Disney's first hurrah. And we were, at the time, the underdog in California because we were the news station. We were KCAL TV, but we had 3 hours worth of news. And we have Pat Harvey as the anchor person from Chicago, with Jerry Dunphy. So we were happy, you know, we were happy. So when it aired, everybody said, wow, that was so cool. Don, you did it. And you get a high five, you know. So you're only as good as, you know, of your last work. Now, the next day, if I mess up, Don, oh. You know? But that was the story. Months later, I submitted it, you know, like other editors. And sure enough, they picked it out. And I actually saw that story, Catherine, in a movie. My edited story in a movie. I think it was, I don't remember. But it was in a movie. I'm like, I cut that. I edited that piece. Because I think it was the NWA story. Mm-hmm. Coming back to, you know, was it something about the Compton something?
Straight out of Compton,
yeah. Right. They did a reflection on the riots at that time. So that was kind of cool. So that's how I got the Emmy. Now, you're right. It is hard to get an Emmy. I got a lot of Emmy nominations, but then I got that one Emmy. And then, like I said, you don't strive for it. You just do good work, and then you submit it. It's almost like playing the lotto. You don't win unless you play. But you have to believe in yourself that this is some good work. A lot of people don't submit it because it costs $50.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. But, you know, throw $50 in and submit it. You just never know. You just really never know.
Well, it's like you said, I go through this a lot. You know, working in journalism as well, you just have to submit it. You know, when you hit the deadline, you have to turn in what you got. You can't go back. So yeah. When I look back at my stuff, I always can see little pieces that I could have did differently.
Right.
I give you kudos for just knowing that you were doing good work and putting it out there.
And you know what the thing is that you may see the little things that might need to be changed, but somebody else may not see it, you know, so you just have to kind of like...
And I'm definitely learning that.
Yeah.
But so why don't we move on to the Whole Foods documentary, Whole Foods of Englewood, Changing Chicago's Food Desert. I'm interested, first of all, why don't we, for everybody, let's just start, why don't you tell me about the film itself, just briefly, so we have a baseline, and then we'll kind of move forward into how you got involved.
Yes. Whole Foods, Englewood, Changing Chicago's Food Desert. I've been in the business for years, and I've never heard the term food desert. So this documentary basically documents how Whole Foods, the market incorporated, Whole Foods Market Incorporated, got involved with the city of Chicago in the community of Englewood to build a store in the Englewood community. Now, everybody knows that Whole Foods has an elite selection of produce and expensive sometimes, but yes, but it's good for you. And when I, but prior to doing the documentary, I would see Whole Foods Inglewood. I mean, not Biggie Park, Whole Foods. I said, wow, that's a nice store. And wouldn't go in it. It's just, you just know it was expensive because you just heard it, you know, because there was Jules and Dominic's. Whole Foods popped up and they made their claim. So, so this story was mind-boggling to me. Why would Whole Foods come into a community like Inglewood that was suffering from low unemployment and plight around? And it was just an interesting community that just, I just couldn't figure it out. And I think a lot of people couldn't figure it out. So the question was, yeah, it was a food desert, and food desert is a good term, and it was a real term, and I found out that is basically a community or a city or an area that lacks the access of having healthy, good healthy food, such as produce, you know, vegetables, fruit, and quality meat products. And I'm looking around, I'm like, yeah, they don't have that in this neighborhood. And I'm looking at this community from a perspective as an instructor at Kennedy King College. That's how I kind of like really wanted to get into it, because Kennedy King College is located right now right across the street from Whole Foods. And prior to Whole Foods moving in, it was just barren ground. But I think the question was in the community, why are they coming out here? Why not a Jules? Why not a Dominic's? Why not a Ulta? But Whole Foods in a community that's already strapped for money, employment, you know, not too many people are, we're kind of grasping that idea. There was an Aldi's there, and there was a Walgreens there. But, you know, Aldi's don't sell. I'm not even sure if Aldi's sell any meat. And if it is, it's just in a freezer.
Yeah.
So this documents how Whole Foods Market Incorporated connected with the city of Chicago and the residents, and how they worked together to build this store that was pretty much customized for that community. Whole Foods understood it was, you know, a food desert then, and he said, we're gonna work it out. Whole Foods knew that their produce and their products were pricey. So when they established themselves, they promised the residents in the city of Chicago that we're going to keep our prices down a little bit lower than the other Whole Foods markets. So to see them, as in Whole Foods, work with people like Asia Butler from RAGE, Residents Association of Greater Inglewood, as well as some of the other community leaders, they literally came out on a week by week, almost a month by month basis as well, to introduce an opportunity to work at the Whole Foods once they got started. So they were, for about a year and a half, there were a lot of events that Whole Foods conducted and offered to the community, just to the Inglewood community, as far as job opportunities. Whole Foods has a practice where wherever they go and build a store, they like to introduce themselves to the local suppliers and find out local suppliers in that area, just in that area, give them an opportunity to introduce themselves to Whole Foods to see if they qualify to offer their products in the store. And I say local suppliers like bakers, you know, people who have been working out of their house, making candles, and things like that. So Whole Foods have a criteria that has to be met in order to be considered a Whole Foods organic, healthy product. So they share that with prospective suppliers and said, you know, if you change your carrot cake, take the sugar out, put these nuts in it, we can put it on the shelf. If you take this cupcake, take off all that sugary icing on the top and use maybe some buttercream, non-fat or what, I'm just, you know, we can get it on the shelf. So with that guidance, that one-on-one guidance that Whole Foods offered to the suppliers, I mean, they're elated. And I know a lot of people who were selected. And in the documentary, we see that. We see the meeting of Whole Foods talking, like we're talking, one-on-one, and saying, hey, I like your food, and then tasting it. So each event that they presented to the community, I was there with the camera. And they allowed me to come in and bring my camera.
How did you get that opportunity? I'm really interested to hear how you connected with, I don't know if you connected with Whole Foods or Rage or who really brought you in, but I would love to hear just how it all began for you.
Yeah, you know, I like to talk, you know.
Do you?
Yeah, I know. And I'm inquisitive. And that's, I think that's that news background, because I also, mm-hmm. you know, worked as a reporter and an anchor. So
many questions.
Yeah, I know. So it's like, what? So if you bump into one person, you know, it's a chain reaction. Mm-hmm. So I had to figure out, how did I think I was baffled for one. And it was on the news, and there was, I think I the first person I met was Asia Butler. And she's the young lady that's the president of, hey Asia, if you're there, that's the president of the RAGE, Resident Association of Greater Englewood. And she expressed to me how she felt about how the community felt about Englewood, Whole Foods coming into Englewood. And she said she was baffled. A lot of people were baffled. And then we continued to talk. I asked her if she was willing to talk on camera, because I wanted to put all this together. She says, cool, yeah. So I talked to her. She introduced me to someone else. I met Cecile DeMello, who at the time worked for Whole Foods. She was just hired by Whole Foods to be almost like the liaison between Whole Foods and the community. Mm-hmm. And she did a phenomenal job, once again, on just talking to the residents in a big forum that was held at the Kennedy King College. And she was letting them know that, hey, Whole Foods is not the enemy. They will accommodate some of the things that we want, which is, of course, hire us first, as in Englewood mm-hmm. community residents first. Give us an opportunity to participate in some of the programs. Not only that, I'll tell you something, Whole Foods even took it up a notch. They had a resume writing workshop prior to the hiring process. So they had the resume writing workshop, and then they had the job interviews one-on-one. Hundreds of people showed up, and then they also offered to suppliers an opportunity. It's another event. Offered to suppliers an opportunity to have a one-on-one interview, bring their food and samples to Whole Foods. So it was just a snowball of events. So once I think I connected with Cecile, she gave me a list of the it was somebody above her. From Whole Foods, the corporate.
Yeah.
And they gave the okay. But in that sense, I would have to be a person of accountability. And I think that they looked at my track record as far as previous documentaries and me working in the television industry for so many years. The Emmy helped. I think, but also too, I was an instructor at Kennedy King College. But you never know how things work, you know, and what kind of says gives a person the opportunity to say, yeah, I want to sign them up, they're cool. And I think that's what happened. So I just had this, he never said, you know, show was favorable. He just said, you're invited to come in and be the fly on the wall, in a sense. So that's what I did. So I was very quiet about it. I was very, you know, not so much like a big production. I just had a camera, light, mm-hmm. and I had my my wife working with me. She worked as a reporter interviewing people. So I couldn't do it alone. You know, yeah. I did the camera, but I had to have somebody to do the interview. She did a phenomenal job. Dana House, she did a great job. Hey, Dana.
And so my understanding is that the Whole Foods documentary was previously released or screened, and then it's just now available for purchase.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So where, Amazon? Talk to me about that. Where can we get the movie?
On amazon.com/shop/DVDO79Productions. DVDO as in the word video with the letter D in front of it, 79 Productions. So it's amazon.com/shop/DVDO79Productions. And you'll see the DVD. Can I show this?
Oh, yeah, of
DVD. And also, too, with the purchase of your DVD, you get a complimentary, I call it a mini poster.
Mini poster.
I have one like this, and it's huge on my wall. So this is what is available. And it aired on WCIU-TV, the U, last year, April in 2017. And a lot of people got a chance to see it. And then, of course, I got people in other cities that did not get a chance to see it, because WCIU-TV is just Chicago. So I was anxious to get it on DVD and make it available as soon as possible for, you know, not just for people who didn't get a chance to see it, but family members who live in California and Texas and things like that. So I'm excited about making that available. So yeah, it did air and it's been a year, so it's about that time.
Oh yeah, well I'm really excited to see it as well. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Okay, so I did want to hear from you in your own opinion. Mm-hmm. What did you find to be maybe the most rewarding or the most impactful element? And maybe there's not even only one specifically. I'm just curious to hear how working with this community, seeing the way that Whole Foods was able to adapt to kind of better serve them, what does that mean to you to be able to have it all on film?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for businesses, other businesses, to look at this video and to see how Whole Foods introduced themselves step by step. Whole Foods made an announcement like 2013 and said, we're coming, mm-hmm. we're going to break ground in Inglewood. They made a formal announcement a couple of years later. That's when they started building. And they made sure, and I'm not on Whole Foods side, I'm just saying what I saw, mm-hmm. you know, because I was very, you know, right in the middle and trying to be fair on both sides. The community, I understood the community, and worked in the community right across the street at Kennedy King, and I understood what Whole Foods was doing. I think we, as in the residents, wasn't quite sure how Whole Foods was going to do it because the word gentrification came up. And they did, oh, well, this is going on, and we saw this happen in Hyde Park. You know, they're going to move us out. So people were concerned about that. But Whole Foods has just been, I think, just been fair, and they've been promising, and they've always backed up everything that was told and mentioned. And then some. I mean, they just took it up another notch. I tell you something, on the day of the grand opening, when Mayor Rahm Emanuel and some of the other dignitaries that was at the stage, plus the media and plus hundreds of residents, including the CEO, COO of Whole Foods, Walter Robb, I think his name is, they talked about, hey, this is a great beginning, Congressman Bobby Rush, that's all in the video and the documentary. They talked about this is the beginning. This is the anchor store. And sure enough, Chipotle and Starbucks is part of that whole unit mm-hmm. as well, maybe a couple of other stores as well. But they just made a big skidoo about it in the media, and I thought that was really cool. But what was really, really cool was that the line started forming. After they finished making the announcement, says, hey, let's go into the store, the lines were forming from the residents to go into the store. But unbeknownst to them, as in the residents, a couple of people from Whole Foods Market, they started passing out these $25 gift cards to each person in line. So they're standing in line anyway. They were going to make a purchase. But to get this $25 card, it's like, wow, I don't have to use my own money. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't mentioned at all. Because usually if someone says, hey, we're going to give out gift cards, you would have had the whole world. Mm-hmm. But they didn't mention it. It was a subtle, like a gift, and I thought that was really, really nice. Nobody expected it, but when they were just passing it out to at least 300-400 people. $25, I think I got two.
You might not
want to
say that.
One for me and one for my wife.
Okay.
Yeah, the coolest report. So we got a chance to interview everybody that was standing in line. I say, what are you going to do with your money? What are you going to do when you get in the store? He's like, I don't know. I've never been in a store like this before. So we got that energy from the people that were standing in line. That was really cool. I think at that time the media left after they made the announcement because the mayor left and the COO from Whole Foods left. But I stayed because I wanted to go into the store mm-hmm. and I wanted to ask the residents, which to me was the key thing. How do you like having this store here in your community? And they just like, this is great. It's about time. Nothing but positiveness.
That's probably really fun for you, shifting into documentary filmmaking, that you can really just go that much deeper with the stories that you're creating and the footage that you're getting. You know, like you said, a lot of the news people had left already.
Yeah.
We have busy days. We're working on multiple things at once. But
you're absolutely right.
If you can commit to just telling the whole story.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure that's very rewarding for
you're
you.
You're absolutely right. Yes. And I understood why they left. Because you're right. They have other stories. They waited for the presentation. They did a presentation. They broke bread, which was a something that they do every time they open up a Whole Foods market. They take this long piece of bread.
Oh, they literally break bread.
It was a Jewish bread. I don't remember the name of it, but that's what they do, and it was so cool. But after they made that announcement, yeah, the media left. And I know they have other stories, but yeah, as a documentarian, I wanted to really see them shop and see the elation on the faces, and also to the suppliers were there. They had the local suppliers, the ones that were selected. I think they selected about maybe 35. So each supplier had a presentation in the store of their perfume, their candles, their the fudge snacks and their cookies, their organic this, and you know, and it was cool. So they were there and they were elated. And they were like, "I got my stuff in the store," because prior to that, they were selling and making stuff out of their house and selling, you know, to neighbors and friends. So that was cool to see that experience.
So the only other thing that I'm curious about, which I'm sure we'll find this out in the film, but I just want to ask it anyways because I need to know, is this something that Whole Foods is doing regularly in other communities? I'm just interested through your research if you found that this was a new concept for them, or had they, you know, done it in other areas?
You know, that's a good question. I think that the success, now Whole Foods had built a store in Detroit, very similar to the one in Chicago. It was built in an urbanized area with people who weren't as privileged, underserved, and that particular Whole Foods in Detroit turned out to be the best, most profitable store in Michigan. And in the documentary, I had an opportunity. My co-producer and myself went out to Detroit. And she's actually from Detroit. Dana's from Detroit. We went out to Detroit, of course, being invited by the corporation, because all the interviews were scheduled for us as far as the meeting the manager and a couple of co-workers. And we went to ask them, what is going on? How do you guys do this? And they said, we just... You know, they were very friendly people. Whole Foods is a friendly place. And they just have a lot of good food. I think people want good food nowadays. So I asked the manager how he would compare Whole Foods in Detroit with the Whole Foods in Inglewood. And at that time, Whole Foods Inglewood had not been completed yet. And I asked him if he had any insight. And he says, well, Whole Foods Inglewood is going to be a little bit different than us. He says, but still, I support what they're going to do, and they're going to be successful. I think Whole Foods saw the success of the one in Detroit and says, hey, we could, you know, we can make this thing work. We can go into underserved areas and make it work. And I think that that's where their heart is, their passion is. And I think that there's a tenderness with them. I'm just by reading and seeing what they're doing, I've just observed it. I see nothing but, you know, respect and admiration for what they do and what they're doing to serve people and offering good food. And I remember speaking with Cecile DeMello, who works at Whole Foods, and she was expressing, and she lives in Inglewood as well. She was expressing how important it is to have good food to take care of her family, and she was just tired of just getting junk stuff. I mean, you know, you if you got junk, you know, you have no choice. You know, grocery stores are kind of far away. You would have to literally take a bus, you know, or drive maybe a mile or two just to go to a grocery store, whereas most communities have a grocery store just in walking distance. So I think that Whole Foods probably saw the success from the one in Detroit and said, hey, we can make this thing happen in other places like Inglewood. And I'm not sure if they followed and done it in other communities. Yeah. I haven't followed them, you know, since then, because, you know, I go to one community to another. But that would be something to look into, that's for sure.
Okay, well, I want to move away from the Whole Foods documentary, but before we do that, I want to remind everybody it's available on Amazon, D-Video 79 Productions,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So... We definitely want everyone to check out the movie, get your mini poster. So the next thing I want to talk to you about, it's just kind of your own personal style. How would you describe yourself as a filmmaker? What kind of projects do you look for? Or do they just come, do they just kind of fall out the sky?
You know, it's interesting. I've learned when I was, I'm a product of Chicago, and in third grade, second, third grade, we had a program in the city school system where musicians and artists would come in and introduce themselves to, you know, third graders and say, hey, you know, you want to learn how to play an instrument? I'll come in every 20 minutes, I mean, for 20 minutes, once a week to introduce you to an instrument. At the time, it was a flutophone. They call it, some people call it a recorder. Mm-hmm. Just getting introduced to the arts and to the music. I met Gwendolyn Brooks in third grade, her coming into the school. And I was just immersed with the me drawing and coloring and the music and things like that. So that continued on in, you know, through my early elementary years as well as high school, where I just embraced the arts. And I think that it just gave me an opportunity to be kind of like kind of free spirit and inquisitive and just curious. I love music, I love video, and just anything that came in that direction, it just kind of piqued my interest. Some things, topics, you know, could be a great story for a newspaper. I wrote for the newspaper, and some great story, and some topics can be a great documentary because now it's full of interviews and storylines that kind of tells itself. Mm-hmm. So it's no one thing that, not that I'm trying to pick out topics that I know is going to make money, this, that, and the other. I'm just picking out topics that I like for myself, because mm-hmm. when you do a documentary, you're totally immersed in it. It's not like, you know, you just do it and I'm just going to put together really anything. Have it. Yeah, you got to be in it. I mean, you wake up in the morning, you're thinking about the next shot that you're going to put in. You're thinking about who to interview. You're doing research. You're trying to get statistics correct. You're calling up people. You're just totally immersed. You really, really got to like it. You really got to like the topic. So I start off with a topic that I really like, which is, you know, the Whole Foods for one. Star for Marvin Gaye, I thought that was cool. I mean, this other program, this other documentary that I'm working on is called The Production Crew. I just wanted to let people know how fun it is to be behind the scenes of television and film, because that's where my life came in. So I wanted to bring that to the forefront. And I had the opportunity for this new documentary called The Production Crew, I had the opportunity to interview a gentleman by the name of Kevin Giss, who worked as the head editor of the Steve Harvey Show when it was out here in Chicago. I also met a young lady by the name of Hope Halliburton, who's a director at ABC News. And I also met a gentleman by the name of Ray Blaney, who's an editor of news and programming at WGN, and also to a gentleman by the name of Deshaun Smith of WYCC-TV. These individuals are dedicated to their craft, editing, directing, and production. And I, once again, I just had the gift of gab. I said, look, I want to do this story on you guys. I want to bring you guys to light. And he said, okay, great, what do you need? I said, I want to interview you for one. And if I can, I'd like to get behind the scenes at your workplace. And, oh, okay, that might be kind of interesting. But once again, I've already accomplished some hurdles in meeting people like Marvin Gaye and other groups and things like that. So I knew what it take. It's just a matter of just dialogue. And once again, being accountable for my responsibilities and being in a workplace with my camera gear and things like that. So I wrote a letter to Kevin Giss that he, and to each individual, Kevin Giss, Hope, and Deshaun, wrote a letter saying, this is my interest. I want to do a behind-the-scenes production on Kevin and what he does at the TV station. Now, I want to show it, for one, I want to show it to my students so they can get an insight on what entails mm-hmm. in the production aspect of television. Also, too, I want to make sure it's available for as an educational tool for other colleges who have media department. And I put all that in the writing. And I got to go ahead. So I'm in Steve Harvey at the studio, and I'm going from one studio to the other, being led by Kevin Gist. And I see him working. He's showing, and he's also talking to the camera. Same thing with WGN. Mr. Ray Blaney invited me in the morning shift. I'm meeting all the anchor people, and he's inviting me and invited me into his world. I see him editing. You see him interacting with the producers, the writers. You see this energy, this slow-moving energy that builds up to the actual newscast. Now you see Ray Blaney, you know, looking at the clock. Hey, Don, I got to get this story finished. You know, he's talking to the camera. You know, I don't have time to, you know, the chit-chat now. But, you know, and the phone is ringing, and, you know, and he's talking. And, okay, it's going to air. And the producer says, hey, Ray, is that going to be ready? Ray says, yeah, it's going to be ready. I got 30 seconds. And, boom, it sends it to the server, and it airs. Deshaun at WYCC, he was part of the production crew of this new show called The Dr. Carolyn Show. And you just see the energy of him running around. Everybody's asking him questions of we need another microphone. You know, where is this at? Or when are we going to start? And the lighting, this. So I captured all this energy. You know, being not obtrusive, but also, too, getting the shots that I can get, that I need. Mm-hmm. Over-the-shoulder shots, front shots. And also, too, each one of these individuals is mic'd. So you can hear them clearly. And that takes the coordination of and the approval of the people upstairs in each one of those departments, because TV stations run on wireless microphones. So I couldn't use a wireless microphone because my wireless microphone could have interfered with their wireless microphones, their signal. And of course, Steve Harvey and the WGN, they have wireless microphones mm-hmm. on different frequencies, you know, on different shows throughout the day, all day long. So I'm going old school with the cable microphones. It's still a microphone, a lavalier microphone, but I'm using the cable. Right, plug into my camera. So that you see, and that's explained as well in the documentary. So that's the production crew, and that's what I'm working on, and that's in post-production. So that's something I really enjoy.
And so being behind the scenes like that, does that make you kind of miss it, like that high energy, fast pace, actually, you know, news production? Or are you kind of happy to be in like a more you know, teaching and having more time to spend on your documentaries? I'm just curious if when you get back in there, you want to, like, you know, click a mouse or make a call.
You know, it's the weirdest thing. I tell you, I've been doing it for so long. You know, I when I have nightmares, it's about news. 20-something years ago, my nightmare is editing a story and not going on air for some reason. The lights went out. The machine broke down. You know, and then I wake up and like, oh my gosh, you know, what happened? I was like, oh, I had a nightmare about working at a TV station 20 years ago. So, and I get those, I get them once every, you know, 5 months or something like that, mm-hmm. where I'm thinking about, you know, those stories. Those stories, the stories that I did as an editor, I'm looking at footage that that has been unedited. It's raw footage. Say, for instance, a tragedy, a car accident, a drowning. The camera operator will shoot all this stuff. You know, sometimes they call them stringers who work overnight. They shoot all this video and they bring it to the TV station. I'm the first guy that's looking at it. Or actually the second. The writer's looking at it first. And then I look at it. So I'm looking at all this raw footage. I'm looking at all this death and mayhem and destruction. I was like, oh my gosh. And it gets to you after a little while. Mm-hmm. I have to edit all that out and make a 1 minute story or a 30 second story that could be digestible for the audience. So you guys won't be squeamish while you're eating dinner at the 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. you know, watching the 5 o'clock show. So there is that sense of urgency that I like to have, that I miss, but, I think that, I'd rather do it at a slower pace now, which is the documentaries. I can enjoy it now, and I can put more into it, and I can really embellish some of the ideas that I have, production-wise, writing-wise, and also, too, I've, as a shooter now, as a videographer, I'm actually filming and editing and writing. So I can embrace all the aspects that that I enjoy. Whereas when I was working at a TV station, I was just editing. You know, the reporters and the writers, and they will come in and bring the tapes, mm-hmm. and they will already be written, and I'm just editing. And but then I went and did some news photography, and then I was doing some news photography and editing. But I wasn't doing any reporting. And then I graduated from that, and I started reporting, and it was a station where I had an opportunity to anchor as well in California for a couple of years, you know, before that big recession hit, which was 2007, I think mm-hmm. it was. But now I can embrace it all and kind of really appreciate some of the skills that I have and some of the art topics that I really want to tackle.
So you've mentioned a couple times that you teach at Kennedy King College.
Yes.
Are you teaching broadcasting?
Yeah, we have a media department. Okay. I've been there as an adjunct professor since 2014. I've relocated from California, maybe like 2012, 13 or something like that. Actually 12, because I worked at a couple of other TV schools in Chicago and in Lombard. I forget the name, ICB, Illinois School of Broadcasting, I think it was. Private school media department. But Kennedy King, they have a media department as well. And yes, I teach there. I teach television production. I teach teach students how to be a reporter. Some of the things involved as far as reading the teleprompter. Editing as well. There's my second class would be minicam and editing. Minicam is a short word for what the videographers do at the TV stations. Minicam is a faster paced career where you reporters will work with a camera operator. They go out in the field. Camera operator takes the camera and he's just videotaping the event as it happens. Nothing's staged. Nothing's redesigned or reconfigured from what it really is. So that footage is captured by the camera operator just the way it is, and it's taken either back to the TV station, or the photographer may edit that story in the truck and feed the completed story to the TV station, and they air from that point. So they call that minicam, where it's just a little faster pace, more so than what they call EFP or electronic field production, where that's a technique or process where it's a little slower. They're doing commercials. They're doing, mm-hmm. you know, things that you see, like Entertainment Tonight, some slower pace where there's no sense of urgency that has to deal with news. So that's EFP production versus ENG production. Electronic news gathering is what I talk about with the minicam. So I teach those things, the differences, and let students know that it's accessible. I try to, you know, let them know that it's not scary. It's not so far-reached. You know, especially if they have a passion. And let them know you're already in the class. So you already got the passion. You're already here. So you're already taking the biggest step of being in college. Because I know, yeah. you know, people say, I'm going to go to college, and years go by. I think I might go to college. I think I might do this. But when they make that move and when they register for it and they get that ticket and they show up, I let them know. I says, you give yourself a standing ovation because you're halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
You're halfway there.
And you came to class.
And you're going to get a grade. And although I like to give grades, but my key thing is I want them to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be confident enough to get an internship, because that's the first phase. Out of school, get an internship at a TV station, radio station,
yeah.
and get that gig. Because it is accessible. And I think with that skill, the skill that you have also too, Catherine, you can take it anywhere,
mm-hmm.
anywhere in the city, anywhere in the world, because it's a journalistic skill of writing, interviewing, and it's something that you enjoy doing. So if someone were to call you at 2:00 in the morning, hey, you know, Meghan Markle's in town. And by the time they hang up, you're already there.
Got my shoes on.
You know, you just, and that's it. But some people are like, oh my gosh, Meghan Markle, so what? Why am I? No, but if you're a journalist, oh, that's the big story.
You got a lot of questions,
man. You know, you want to be a friend for one, you know, and get a telephone number, and then, of course, the story. So that's how it usually plays. So I just let the students and just kind of encourage them that they're on the right track.
And with that being said, the last thing that I wanted to ask you about, which I'm sure you have a really great grasp on this as a teacher, is just what kind of advice you have for someone that's interested in videography, film production, news production, really the whole realm? Because I think a lot of times it can be kind of discouraging. Maybe people don't always think of reporting as a creative field, but
yeah.
I feel like it is for me personally.
Yes.
And film definitely is creative, and I think it can be discouraging sometimes to have that passion and not know how you're going to make it work for you. So I just wanted to hear your perspective with so much experience in it.
Yeah.
How do you get your foot in the door?
Well, I think people's skills. I think you have to like people because, like you mentioned, when you're reporting, you're talking to people. You're not talking to inanimated items. You're talking to people, and you have to be sensitive to them. So you have to have, you know, a lust for being out and not saying an extrovert, but at least, you know, enjoying the company of people, having a conversation, because that's how you get the stories, like just what we're having now. That's how you get the stories. That's how you get people to talk and to capture it on camera. And then that's the first phase. And then all of a sudden you're writing about it. And next thing you know, it's on the air. So I encourage the students to, after they take classes, they should take any class that they see that involves television production, editing, writing. You know, my daughter Prayel, she's interested in, and she's aspiring to be a writer for television and film. She's a great writer, dedicated, and I just tell her to keep taking classes. So she's taking classes wherever she's wherever city she's in. She just relocated from LA out here, so she's at DuPage and and she's on her way to Columbia College. But she enjoys it as well. But I also tell her, you need to get an internship.
Mm-hmm.
Get an internship. And you can get an internship while you're in college, and also, too, you can get an internship a year or two after you graduate from college. So you want to get the insight in just to see if you really like it. Because this is a dynamic within the TV station and the radio stations where it's fast. You know, they want things like, you know, like, it, you know, can you give it to me like yesterday? Mm-hmm. You have to work and think fast. And so there's a different type of person who really can do that, can work what we call under the clock, or, you know, under the gun, because, you know, you got 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you're making decisions where you say, normally you would take your time and write this lengthy story. You've got 30 minutes to do it or 15 minutes to do it. You just cut to the chase. They want something fast. They just want to make it on air. They don't want anything mm-hmm. long. This is what they call down and dirty. They say, okay, Catherine, we know, you know, you can do some pretty work when you got an hour and a half, but we want something down and dirty. We just want the facts, something real short and quick, and if you can do it in 15 minutes, that'll be great. Because they just want to, one TV station want to beat the other TV station
mm-hmm.
as far as having that that story at the top of their newscast. And usually the news directors, they have four or five TV stations, four or five televisions in their room. So they're looking at the competitors. Mm-hmm. And if you're working on a story, and say, for instance, you're Channel 9, and you're working on a story, and Channel 9's into a commercial, you know, he's getting phone calls. Yeah, we're going to make that story. Yeah, we're going to make it. Catherine's working. Okay, great. You know, so you're looking at Channel 9, Channel 7, Channel 2, Channel 5. All of a sudden, Channel 9 breaks in with the story you just finished, and Channel 7 and Channel 5, they're still in commercials. They're talking about the weather. They're talking about sports. And you got that breaking story that's airing right then and there. Everybody's tuning in to Channel 9. And you get the kudos. So that's something that if you can work under stress, and it's a good stress. It's not bad stress. It's a good stress. But what you have to do is you just got to cut to the chase. You have to make the decision what to take out, what to leave out, that sort of thing. That's all on you. They just want a final product. But you have to make that decision on how can I get this thing done in 10 minutes. I'll just use this mm-hmm. shot, use that shot. I'll just write about this, dates, this, that, and the other, and that's it. So I think that if they have, the students have that passion and have that interest, and they know that it's high energy, they also know that, I think a lot of them just want to be on camera. They just want to be on camera, just like some of the TV shows we see. But there's like you mentioned, the reporting is a great career. It can be fun. It can be artsy. And then it also can be hard news,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the key thing is presenting the facts. And that's basically what it is. You're presenting the facts. You don't have to elaborate. You don't have to make up anything. You just present what it is, you know. And if it's, it could be a 1 minute piece where, you know, there's this hurricane and an eye, and or it can be something like, hey, there was a car accident. We don't know anything else, but that there was a car accident on, you know, Cottage Grove and 75th. We'll keep you posted. You know, live from, you know, Channel 9. I'm Catherine. You know, but I think that take classes.
Yeah.
Just take classes anywhere. You know, workshops. Seminars, anything that has anything to do with your aspiration. And also to visit other showings, other events where they're showing documentaries and other news stories and other pieces of work from other people who have got a chance to finish their thing and they're showing it in a local theater. You know, visit them, visit those events so you can meet some of those people who have already gotten something finished. So, I just think it's just more classes and meet people, meet people, and then internships. And then, you know, when the opportunity arrives, you know, if you feel confident enough, you know, start applying for jobs.
Well, perfect. So I'm out of questions for you, and I'm going to cut us off because I feel like we are both the kind of people that could talk for a whole nother hour.
I know.
I love journalism. Yeah. I could tell you do too.
Yeah.
So much... So much we haven't touched on, but we got the film Whole Foods Inglewood, Changing Chicago's Food Desert on Amazon.com/shop/DVideo79Productions.
Yes, you got it. Right. You got a good memory. See? Yeah, you are a professional.
So everybody check out the documentary. Keep a lookout for the production.
What's the production crew.
The production crew.
Yes.
When is that going to be coming, you think?
You know what? I made a promise to myself and to the people that are involved, spring 2019.
Spring 2019, yeah. The production 2019. Crew. Keep an eye on Don Howe, his documentaries. Check him over at Kennedy King College if you want to learn more.
Yeah.
Otherwise, thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate it.
I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great to talk to a fellow journalist. You know, just like you said, we could talk all day long about this stuff. And sometimes you know somebody, I'll know somebody, and next thing you know, that's another thing. How, you know, you can introduce.
It's all about networking.
Absolutely. And either over a cup of coffee or an event like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perfect. Well, I'm Catherine Newman. This is Conversations with a Citizen. We're signing off for now, but we'll be back again next week.